You're pro spatchcock.
Am I?
How do you feel about the turkeys I've made the last 2 or 3 years?
I mean, if that's what spatchcocking is, then I guess it'd put me in.
Yeah. Spatchcocking is the simple process of cutting out the backbone of the turkey, removing the thighs, and then kind of flatten it a little bit. So
kind of performing surgery.
Yeah. It's more of a necropsy or whatever. Sure. But, you know, the idea is the breast, the white meat and the dark meat cook at different rates and temperatures. You need them done to different amounts. So a lot of the shenanigans when you're making a turkey are to, you know, don't overcook the breast because you need it to like 160 or 165.
You want succulence.
Yeah. And you want the thighs to be up to like 170. You want them a little bit more cooked. So you do a lot of stuff like flip the turkey and a bunch of nonsense. But if you just chop the backbone out and then lay it flat, then you can just do the whole thing at one time. It works much better.
Set it and forget it.
Well, you can start.
As a wise man once said.
And you can start the thighs and then put the breast in once the thighs are already going.
And then you can stuff that wonderful stuffing in there.
Oh, no. Then you just put a whole giant pile of stuffing and then you rest the turkey on top of it.
Oh, you put it under?
Like a roof.
Wait a minute.
Let me tell you what happens.
It's not really stuffing when you don't stuff it in the carcass, right?
Look, when you cut the backbone out, there's nothing to stuff inside.
I guess, but then what do you call the stuffing?
It's stuffing.
It's the under.
It's dressing, then, I guess. Let me tell you what happens when you put the dressing, when you put the stuffing underneath the bird. All the delicious fat that renders when the bird gets hot goes down through the meat, makes the meat nice and juicy and moist and delicious. And then where does it go from there? Straight to the stuffing.
Yeah.
So instead of having a little tiny cavity-sized amount of turkey butt stuffing, it's all butt stuffing.
Yeah.
And you know what the best stuffing is?
What's that?
The butt stuffing.
Hi, Will.
I think it's time for Brad and Will to make a tech pod.
You know what I'm thankful for?
What are you thankful for?
The opportunity to get together and sit down and talk about a wide range of tech topics.
It is a delight.
On a one topic per week basis.
Well, this week our topic is something a little different than we've done in the past.
Yeah.
This week we're going to talk about technologies that we are thankful for.
Yeah.
Because it's Thanksgiving. It's the season.
It's the time of year.
Yeah.
It's the season.
The Easter Bunny's coming. We got to think about... Wait, no, that's...
Nope.
No.
Nope, next year.
It's bunk that there's no like animal mascot for Thanksgiving.
Is it not the turkey?
I mean,
I guess the turkey's getting devoured.
The turkey's more of the sacrifice.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Yeah. Huh. There should be a cheerful yet sometimes a little bit sinister animal mascot for Thanksgiving.
Yes. I just want to point out, I think the just given the nature of this podcast, I think we've constrained these topics to pretty like, you know, everyday geeky around the house sort of consumer tech stuff.
Yeah, consumer electronics.
You know, I just want to make the point there's a lot of more meaningful stuff to be thankful for.
I'm really thankful for running water and electricity, having not had them multiple times this year.
Totally. Stuff like that. And, you know, there's lots of, you know, charities and activist groups and
medical technologies. Yes,
a lot of groups out there to be thankful for doing a lot of important work these days. But I just wanted to throw that out there because the... The list of things we're thankful for that we've assembled here are from a fairly narrow category, let's say.
Now that you put it that way,
things
I feel,
that you might encounter around our houses.
Yeah, things that I could sit at my desk and turn the chair and look at and see maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I'm thankful for, Brad?
What's that?
I'm thankful that, you know what? The tools used to produce podcast and video have gotten really easy.
Democratized, you might say.
I was trying not to say that, but yes, they've been democratized. So
they're available to everyone.
When I started at Whiskey Media in like the start of 2010, we didn't have a dedicated studio. I think you guys were producing video with just like one capture box, and
I think that's right.
Maybe unplugging and plugging HDMI cables to change shots and stuff like that.
I think that's right.
So we didn't have a video switcher. The thing that we used to record podcasts was this huge mixer that you had to plug into a laptop and like you basically had to have a dedicated space for it.
Was that the one that was like the size of a console?
The audio one.
I don't mean a video game console, but I mean like
it wasn't the Yamaha one. That was later. It was that long skinny one with no knobs.
Okay. That was a little smaller, but still like it has an industrial look to it.
Well, it was still like $300.
Not consumer technology. Yeah, exactly.
It was expensive.
Yeah. And some of the video stuff back then. So a lot of video capture and switching solutions were like tens of thousands of dollars.
I mean, when we set up the basement at on the Front Street office, the second office that I was in, not the Sausalito one, but the one in San Francisco, I feel like we spent all in over the time we were there, like $250,000 on hardware.
Wow. Yeah. I guess I
probably counting cameras and stuff.
Yeah, yeah,
too.
Yeah. I wasn't involved in those purchases, but I guess I would believe that. That sounds astronomical to me.
It was. I mean, if we didn't, it's because Vinny was really good about figuring out the least expensive. Like he's the kind of person I love to talk to about this stuff, because he's like, well, here's the way that NBC would do it, but if you want to do it for $5,000 instead of $500,000, here's what you do.
He's very good at that stuff.
Well, and the thing that's happened is, like, I'm looking at our podcast kit, which is two boxes, a power strip, and two headsets,
each of which each box would fit in a pocket.
I carry it in a tiny pocket. Little duffel bag.
Yeah.
A baby duffel bag. So we record with a Zoom H6, which for podcasters has revolutionized portable podcasting. It's basically a 4-6 XLR recording device that records multiple independent audio tracks.
I never heard of this thing before we started doing this, and you showed up with it. I was like, wow, that's things got easier.
It's not perfect. Yeah. Like, there's definitely issues with it, because it's real fiddly depending on the type of mic you use and stuff like that. But it's eminently workable, and it sounds as good as like the big giant board once you work out the kinks.
What do you think is in that thing, like in terms of horsepower or compute?
Probably a little ARM processor, if I had to guess. I don't know.
Is this just another one of the infinite examples of like fast, cheap, low power processors making everything better?
Well, and also dedicated audio, like the DACs and stuff like that, have gotten inexpensive too,
and that's probably all trickled down from phones and so forth.
Probably like that stuff was working its way, like even stereos iPods and stuff like that had been working that direction.
Like we should probably mention there's no product placement going on here or anything. Like, this is just a thing you bought and that we use.
Yeah, no, that's like, exactly
they,
right.
They have not gotten in touch with us to talk about this thing or anything.
I'm probably going to put links that include affiliate links in the show notes for this, if you want to find out. What, full disclosure, FTC, welcome.
Fair enough.
So I don't think Zoom even says what the CPU is in that thing. And then the other box is just a headphone amplifier. So the Zoom only has one headphone out. The headphone amp splits that into four individual ones. And the one we use is a Behringer HA400, which is literally a $20, 12 volt, headphone amp. And it's quarter inch inputs, and outputs. And, it means we don't have to fool with adapters, which is what adds all the crackle, to all of your recordings, in my experience.
Also, this whole setup we've got going here is what, allowed me to be introduced to the concept of having all the wires at like right angles to each other and stuff.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's just a whole weird world of best practices I was not aware of.
Yeah. This is ask me how we learned all this the hard way. Cause this is more or less the same setup we used for, Still Entitled for a long time. And the thing that you learn is that the microphone cables have to cross power cables at right angles. Cause even though XLRs are pretty well shielded, you can get into situations like you have a Curly Q XLR on your cable on your headphones, and that one, if it goes across a power, will pick up the little bit of hum, which you want to avoid. So yeah, for like this, a whole thing headset, the headsets are, let's see.
He's taking off his headset.
Sennheiser HMD 280s.
Okay.
So Sennheiser's naming scheme, I think one of those letters, HMD, I think it's H, the M means it has a microphone. And 280 is their like mid-range studio headphones, over-ear closed headphones. And then the microphone is just a decent super cardioid boom mic that sits right in front of you.
The stuff all seems quite good, you know.
Yeah.
For the money.
Well, and it fit, like I said, you can put it in a carry. It's like way small. It'll fit in the under seat. The bag it goes in will fit under the seat on the airplane.
This kind of thing is probably... helps explain why everyone and their brother seems to have a podcast these days.
You don't even need that. You just need a gaming headset for that, man.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wild. Recording stuff, video capture stuff. I mean, I don't even know where it's at these days, but I've got a little Magewell doohickey that's just USB 3.
Oh, what does that do?
It's just HDMI in.
Oh, for your computer.
Yeah. Captures uncompressed 1080p 60 through HDMI. That's just a USB 3 dongle. But that stuff is just getting cheaper and smaller and easier to use all the time.
So since I delved into the game streaming a couple of years ago, because I wanted to not save PUBG clips on my hard drive anymore, because they were taking up too much space, bad reason to do this. I was amazed because, like I said, on the video side, with the rise of like open source software OBS and the offshoots like Slobs and the Streamlabs OBS and all the other stuff, it's amazing. Yeah. Like I have basically the same hardware you guys use to shoot quick looks, plus a camera, because I don't think you did cameras.
No.
Yeah, you don't do faces. The capture card was like $200, and I got a camera instead of a webcam, which was another $150-$200, and it's all just there. It just works. And then like little things like the Stream Deck. Do you know what that is?
The Elgato keypad,
yeah,
fiddly fingerboard thing.
So do you know what that is actually?
I mean, it's programmable, right?
Well, yeah. So you can program it. You can put whatever pictures you want on the
macros
buttons
and stuff.
It's all it is a little screen, an LCD touchscreen or an OLED touchscreen. I can't remember which, with clear keys on top, and they partition it out where the keys are. But you can you can program really complicated macros and stuff on that now. And even control, I think you can even control other computers. You might only be able to do that with an iPhone or iPad app. But like stuff like that gives you a lot of the flexibility you have with like the big giant control board that you guys have at Giant Bomb, but you know, a thing that sits on a normal human being's desk. So
capture for the people.
Yeah. Anybody can be a Twitch streamer.
That's right.
Anybody can play video games on there. Anybody can make a podcast.
Just expose everything about your entire life to.
Yeah, it's great.
The incredibly friendly environment on the internet.
The internet's terrific.
Nothing could go wrong.
If you want to pitch your podcast to us, just please don't actually, but there's a lot of good resources for that.
Totally.
So that I'm thankful for the democratization of broadcasting technology,
you said
Brad.
It.
That is one of the things I am thankful
you
for.
Used the word
this year.
That's a good one.
What are you thankful for?
Let's say, how about on my list here? I've wrote down home automation.
Oh,
and it's not perfect, or even close to perfect. I have a lot of problems with it actually. But I feel like it's getting there to the point that I'm actually genuinely enjoying some of the things it's enabling around the house now.
What do you use home automation for in your house?
Not a lot. I mean, it's like some lights,
okay,
for the most part. I bought something else that could be incorporated into this topic is sort of cheaper knockoff versions of the really pricey home automation stuff that's out there. Really what I'm actually saying is I'm just glad there are other companies trying to eat the Philips Hue's lunch now.
Oh, well, look,
because that stuff is just astronomically priced.
It is incredibly aggressively, offensively overpriced.
God, I've never bought a single I've eyeballed the Hue stuff for years and I just can't.
They haven't reduced prices. Like LED light bulbs have gotten an order of magnitude or maybe two orders of magnitude less expensive.
Yeah,
in the time since they've been out.
$3 a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, you can get a connected bulb for $9 now.
Like a Wi-Fi one?
Like a Cree connected.
No kidding.
Those are Zigbee or Z-Wave. I can't remember which one, but you need a hub with those. But yeah.
Okay.
But they're unbelievably cheap. And then here's the Hue.
Yeah.
$75 for two bulbs.
And everything I've heard about the Hue makes it sound like it is probably the best item of that type on the market.
I don't think so anymore.
Or maybe not anymore.
I think they were for a long time.
Seems like for a long time that was the case, but still not, maybe not worth that kind of premium.
Look, the colored lights that they do are really neat and kind of novel. I don't think they're necessary in any way at all. I have three colored Hue bulbs, the Hue light strip, and a couple of the Hue Lux bulbs, the color temperature white ones. And they're really good. But they're not at all worth the price premium.
No.
Yeah, none of that is.
So part of what I'm thankful for is just that there are a bunch of no-name versions of that stuff getting out there now for like a tenth of the price.
Yeah.
Like I bought a pretty nice little USB, like it's a 6-foot LED light strip. Kind of stuck it on the back of my desk. It can be changed to any color with the Apple Home app.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow, it works with Apple Home?
Yeah. Surprisingly. Oh. The brand on it is, I guess you say it, iHaper.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's little. Oh, have you seen that?
Yeah.
Little I, capital H, A-P-E-R.
Yeah.
I assume it's out of Shenzhen or.
It's almost certainly.
Has to be. USB powered, like does pretty much what I would have wanted out of the Hue stuff for $25.
That's amazing.
Of course, you pointed out to me at one point that it was probably not like UL approved.
I mean,
I didn't look at the packaging, but I hope it doesn't burn my house down.
Well, so here's the thing. It's hard to burn a house down with a USB 5 volt.
Okay.
Out, yes. 500 milliamps.
Yes. And I did plug it into a decent you know, accredited USB power, power brick.
So the place that the danger is in the AC to DC conversion.
Actual electrical transformer type stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not an electrical engineer. This is my understanding of this. I had this explained to me that it's really hard to burn your house down with USB.
Don't trust anything you hear on this podcast, but we're pretty sure.
I have killed a laptop with USB.
Wow.
Yeah. I blew up a laptop with a laptop motherboard with an Arduino.
Yeah.
Breadboard one time.
Yikes. Huh.
That was expensive.
Okay. Well, I don't think I'm going to get into anything that bespoke around here, but you know, we got lights on timers around here, which is nice, especially with like daylight savings.
Yeah.
Just kind of have a light come on. Like a dark house is not fun, right?
It sucks.
Especially like right at this moment when the times has just changed and like you're coming home to just a,
it's got full dark.
So like coming home and having the lights all on when you get there is kind of a nice thing.
Well, and for me, so we did motion. I have motion sensors in the rooms that have like foot traffic. I didn't put them in the bedrooms. But yeah, like once I figured out like the process of getting the home automation stuff in our house to work right was really interesting because it was as much about me understanding how we use our house about figuring out the technology. Like I know that we have a bedtime routine for our daughter. And once that happens, then her lights go off and we play music in her room. And also we can turn off the lights in the rooms that won't be used again until bedtime, like my bedroom. And like all that stuff happens automatically because I just say, Alexa, you know, it's bedtime for the kiddo. And it runs a routine that does like 10 things, which is super awesome. I love that I leave the house and I know that I like if I forgot to turn a light off, it's going to turn off as soon as I get a 300 yards from the house.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah, totally. I feel like it's still like another, 3-5 years away from fully settling down because there's still so many competing standards and like different power bricks support different ones. And
I don't think it's ever going to.
Some of them are very unreliable.
So this
I've got a couple that are just chronically kind of disconnecting and reconnecting from the Wi-Fi. Like they become unresponsive.
I was going to say they're Wi-Fi ones, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's so the difference between the Wi-Fi stuff and like the Zigbee and Z-Wave stuff that's sold by Samsung SmartThings and Nest and the places that are backed by the giant multinational companies, it seems to be reliability.
Really?
Like when I've had Wi-Fi light bulbs before, they would disconnect and reconnect. Even like the old GE SmartLink bulbs were terrible.
Yeah.
And also the light they made was awful too. But like you can get a Cree-connected LED dimmable smart bulb that works in any normal, what is it, A11 socket or what?
A16,
I don't know
which one.
Yeah,
maybe A15 might be the appliance.
It's the big screw-in bulb that like 99% of your light bulbs are. Yeah normalized light bulb. Like they it just works.
How much are the Cree is a good one, right?
Crees are great.
Like I think those are the kind of the highest rated reliability for basic LED bulbs that I've seen.
Those
are the best price to.
So they make good light, which is why I buy them. The price, like I found them for as low as $7 or $8 each. If you buy a 3-pack
for the connected ones, Wow.
Usually I think they're like $15 each, $20 each. Home Depot.
Still a little bit much, but we're getting there.
Well, but they also are good for like 100,000 hours or something. Yeah. So like you're not going to replace those bulbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, making stuff go around the house.
It's neat. Do you use it for anything else? Do you use like you have your coffee maker or anything hooked up to it?
No, nothing quite that ambitious yet. But like that's more like owning a home type stuff, which around here we'll see.
Yeah, just wait for the recession and then
I'm sure that'll
jump.
I'm sure that'll fix everything.
It's always my answer to everything.
Yeah. What else are you thankful for?
You know, I have a friend who works at Bose, which is a thing I never thought I would say, but he introduced me to these. they call them earphones. So they're basically noise connected headphones, but they have a little more processing power inside.
Noise canceling headphones?
Noise canceling headphones. Yeah. What did I say?
Connected.
Noise canceling headphones. But they do a little more processing power and they use the microphones that you use for the noise canceling to like let you magnify sound in a specific direction.
Okay.
I
don't want to get ahead of you.
No, go ahead.
Is that the kind of thing that is starting to make its way into stuff like the AirPod Pros that I'm seeing? Because Apple has some silly pithy name for that feature in the pros and I can't remember exactly what
it is, but it is
I think a similar kind of thing of kind of letting people who are talking to you come through.
Live listen is what it's called, or hearing.
Yeah.
So at least in the original AirPods it doesn't magnify, isolate, and amplify. Yeah, so these things actually, I mean, first the noise canceling is really good. That's like they're in ear. They like rest on the, they rest on your ear so they don't block everything. I mean, you can put cups on that will block everything, but they're not like the ear canal buds that you have to jam all the way into your ear holes, and they don't go over your head. So they're really comfortable to wear for long periods. They have like that little loop that goes inside the pinna of your ear. And they do great noise canceling. You put them on the airplane, you don't hear anything, which is really all I give a shit about. The noise, I can't remember what they call it, but like the amplification basically means that like if you're in a bar and there's a lot of people talking around you, or if you're on the airplane and the flight attendant comes up and says, hey, what do you want to drink? You can say, I want this to just focus in directly in front of me, like a 90 degree angle to the left and right, straight ahead.
It has directionality to it?
Dude, it's amazing.
Like that you can configure?
Yes.
Wow.
So you configure it on the app on your phone. Cool. And you can like, if you were standing 20 feet away in your kitchen and whispering, I could turn it up enough and aim my head at you and I would be able to hear what you were saying. Yeah. It's a little creepy.
That's some real kind of future spy, like James Bond tech kind of stuff.
Well, so this came up because I have specific kinds of hearing problems in that it's unclear to me whether it's a brain problem or an ear problem, but like I can't pick out certain people's voices in crowded rooms at all.
Huh.
Like if your voice is in the same range, like you'd be fine because you have a deep voice. But if your voice is in the same kind of frequency as like crowd murmur,
ambient noise,
I'm never going to be able to hear you.
Wow.
No matter how loud you yell. So he was like, you should try these. And he gave them to me at this conference we were at. And I used them for a couple of days. And I was like, I would like to buy up some of these. And he's like, well, so here you go. And he gave me his discount, which was really cool. But yeah, they're neat. I like them a lot. They're called Bose earphones. They're like $500. So they are way, way, way expensive. Yeah,
no offense to any Bose fans out there, but like their stuff seems nice, but also
it is.
Bose equipment kind of seems like the Philips Hue of the audio world.
I got a significant discount on that and felt like it was still pretty expensive.
Yeah.
They are the nicest pair of they don't sound the best, but the noise canceling and the amplification stuff is magic.
Yeah, the full disclosure, the one Bose product I own is I can't remember what the model is, but probably about 5 years ago I bought the noise canceling earbuds. There are newer models out from like them,
the
now
neck buds.
They're the little just the in-ear ones, but they were the ones that Wirecutter recommended as like, because they did pretty specific like kind of oral tests on like exactly how well the noise canceling worked, and they're like, hey, this blocks the most.
Lauren Dragon over there, Dragon, I don't know how you say her last name, is fabulous. Her headphone reviews are tremendous.
And I can't get through a flight without them anymore. Like if I were to ever forget them when I went to the airport, I would,
being
hyperbolic here, I wouldn't actually turn around and miss my flight, but I would be incredibly sad. Like
I've thought about, it's
like you just don't understand how much more peaceful that experience is until you block out that drone.
It's, you know, 2016, 2017, 2018, I spent a ton of time on airplanes and it made such a huge difference having like you feel way more. Yeah. There's a feeling when you get off the airplane where you just feel exhausted, even if it was just like a 90-minute flight and like you did nothing else unusual that day. And it helps. It helps.
Just the kind of mental drag that you accumulate on a plane. Sort of brings that whole thing down a little bit. All right. You ready for the most exciting item on this entire list?
Hit me.
I have written down the ease of installing Windows.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Because I just did a reinstall like a month ago or something. And, this is a very specific category of people that spent a lot of time reinstalling Windows, let's say in the 90s.
Well,
but that process has gotten so easy and so fast now. Like, it's just I used to think of that as a half the day or all day task practically.
Well, so now the thing for me is that it's like it takes 20 minutes to reinstall Windows and then like 6 hours to get everything back.
There's a lot of customization that has to happen. But
I built a new computer this summer and I hadn't done a Windows install. Like I think my last Windows install lasted the entire life of that motherboard.
Wow.
Which has never happened before.
Yeah, it has gotten. I usually go like a good couple years at least now.
Yeah.
Before I really start feeling like the cruft is too much to deal with.
It used to be like you could install a bad driver update and you're like, now I got to reinstall Windows.
Time to burn another afternoon on this for the sixth time.
But yeah, it's a much better process now.
Like not having to have installation media around, I feel like is huge. I mean, some of this is just like how Microsoft has changed and gotten better as a company. I think I feel like since Nadella took over.
Did you have to call and give them your number?
I don't think I ever had to do that whole like change. You're talking about like changing motherboards.
Yeah,
like,
if you change too many pieces of hardware. I changed enough
hardware in this PC that you don't think that I'm legitimately using Windows anymore. No, like, did you actually have to talk to a person?
No, I had to put the code back in and mash the reactivate button. And then it popped up a prompt that was like, what hardware have you changed? Or have you changed hardware in this machine lately? And you said yes. And they were like, okay, you're activated.
Okay, so not actually that big a deal.
No, it was. I was thrilled because I expected to have to call somebody with like a terrible VoIP connection to the other part of the halfway around the world and then read 75 numbers to them or something ridiculous. But I didn't. It was nice.
Yeah, I mean, they do still track that stuff. If you go into your Microsoft account and look at your devices, you'll still see like the motherboard you have your Windows license tied to listed there.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They still like, they still name your PC on your list of devices after the motherboard that's in it.
Farnsworth 1, Farnsworth 2, and yes. Farnsworth 3.
Yes.
Wow.
But like not having to keep like an installation CD around, you know, like it takes 5 minutes to go download the image from them and write it to an installer.
A thumb drive.
And like just the speed of the installation process itself is like, especially like I'm running off an NVMe drive for my system drive now, which is probably overkill for that purpose, but
no,
absolute fastest thing.
It speeds your boot time.
Yeah.
NVMe will boot faster.
But like the installing from a USB 3 storage device to that insanely fast drive, like I barely have time to get my phone out and like pull up Twitter and look at it for more than 90 seconds. And like the installation is done.
Can I just,
and it's like booting into actual real Windows. Like it's insanity.
Can I just say, the thing I don't like about this whole process is like every time it does one of the big, like the half year patches to Windows 10 and it
the feature reboots updates.
And it's like, don't worry, we've got your data.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that.
Their attempts at being human.
Yeah, no, they shouldn't.
Look. Hello. Yeah. Everything's right where you left it.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
No. No, you look, I don't care. I don't want you to even think about that.
Yeah.
You don't have to communicate this to me.
Microsoft, I feel like Microsoft in general has gotten so much better as a company in the last few years, but their attempts at being Apple are more than a little grating. I
mean, Apple's attempts are grating. So
yeah,
there's
even Apple is not as good at being Apple as it used to be.
And then the other thing that makes me crazy is when the rare blue screens you get, it has that QR code there.
Yeah. And a big frowny face.
The frowny face is fine. I'm not going to get into the frowny face being lame, but the QR code just goes to a generic page.
Yeah. Yes.
That's so your computer has crashed. Yep. Here's some stuff. They have error messages there. Why aren't the QR codes unique for the error message?
That stuff is knowledge bases are useless.
The knowledge base used to be really good, and it's gotten progressively worse ever since they launched Bing. What we're thankful for. I'm not thankful. Next week is the anti-thankful awards.
Right. Here's everything we hate.
Yeah. Here's everything we're not thankful
knowledge,
for.
The knowledge base has been replaced by Stack Overflow. Just basically.
I have thoughts about Stack. We'll get into the Stack Overflow next time.
Yeah.
I feel like Windows, I mean, Windows 10, they've kind of mucked up off and on.
You think?
They've deleted people's data and some stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Yes, there have been like, some
they've
pretty,
made some big mistakes.
There have been some pretty rough bugs. I will give you that.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're on an up cycle right now, right? Like Windows has really been kind of like on, like one on, one off for a while. Like,
yeah. You know? I mean, I think people who got their data deleted by 1903 or whatever it was, or 1811.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Probably would feel like this is a pretty down cycle.
I guess you're right. But I mean, like, by and large, XP was good. Vista was bad. 7 was good. 8 was bad. Now 10 is good. Like,
I mean, SP2 was pretty good.
Yeah, that's, XP was an up Windows.
Yeah. I can get behind that, I guess. I feel like 10 has overall, like, compared and contrasted with, say, Adobe, where they change everybody to a subscription model, charge them every year, and then barely do anything, it seems like, some years.
Yeah.
This year, who knows what changed. The Windows 10 thing has largely been good.
Yeah, they've practically gone the OS 10 route at this point, right? I mean, it's not literally free, but I feel like Windows is... You can kind of just get it right at this point.
Well,
like,
so you can install it.
Like, I know you can like sort of trial it for quite a while. I think now I forget exactly how they're handling all that stuff.
So
like,
I think,
I mean, we're a long way from the days when like a good version of Windows was several hundred dollars.
Yeah.
Is what I mean.
Gary had to buy new Windows for his computer because he was keeping the old one up. And it was an OEM build, so he couldn't transfer his license over. And it was like $100, I think.
Okay. For the good one? For Pro?
For no, he only got... The thing is, you don't need Pro anymore. Pro has domain features. Like, it's domain features and BitLocker.
Okay.
So unless you're hole encrypting your hard drive or connecting to a domain, you really don't need Pro.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I went down the feature list with him and was like, I don't think you need any of this stuff. It's not worth an extra $100.
Yeah, okay.
Hundo.
Well, $100 still, like, not in, you know, it's not insignificant.
Yeah. Well, you can always upgrade if you want.
Yeah.
You can always, like, hit the button later and add it in.
But what I mean is, like, it's not exactly free.
Like, yeah,
like, but Windows 10 is not exactly OS 10 in terms of how easily attained but
you pay for OS 10 when you buy the hardware.
Yeah.
Like, I'm buying it. Like, I think if you build a new computer, you're keeping your old one around, you put Windows 10 on it, you buy Windows 10 then, and then you just move that to every computer down the line.
Yeah.
Assuming, you know, I have two active Windows 10 licenses in my house, basically.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not perfect as somebody who's been fighting for the last, since I reinstalled, has been fighting to try to make sure my network's drives stay connected every time I reboot. Like, it's got its issues.
Yeah, you gotta have that Samba stuff.
Generally just so much better than it used to be from the moment of installing or downloading the install media to
getting it,
you know, configured, customized, all that stuff. Like, it just is so much more pleasant than it used to be.
Not having to put boot sectors on a CD.
Yeah.
I'm glad I never have to do that.
Like, again, I can't remember the last time I installed motherboard specific drivers for anything.
Well, you should still do that. Yeah, because the Microsoft ones aren't as good as the manufacturer ones. Seems you should at least install the Intel chipset driver.
I think I might have done that.
That'll make your stuff... Like, if your stuff isn't sleeping, this rolls right into your next problem, into your next pick.
Yeah.
If your stuff isn't sleeping right, then there are... that's almost always the Microsoft driver not doing the thing that it's supposed to do.
My habit is just to go look at Device Manager after I install Windows, and if anything is unidentified or has a little yellow flag on it, I'm like, all right, I should go find a driver. But if everything is recognized, I'm like, that's fine.
Okay. You install your chipset driver, you install your network drivers, you install if you have Bluetooth, you install the USB driver, you install the graphics card driver, maybe sound.
This doesn't sound very plug and play to me.
It is not at all plug and play.
Computers,
look, plug and play is a lie, Brad. I hope. Anyway, well, so what's your next thing on the list?
Plug and play is another thing I wrote down on this list.
Oh,
but all right, tell me why it's bullshit.
No, tell me why you like it. This is a positive podcast. Because this isn't about me grousing.
Because I started on Windows 3.1.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
And DOS 6.2 or whatever.
We were having to manually select the IRQ.
We've talked about modem init strings and interrupt requests and direct memory access. And
okay, so plug and play started with, like, what, USB and Windows 98 probably?
Sure.
OSR2.
I think that was like a back of box feature in Windows 95, right?
OSR2 only.
Was it?
No USB support in Windows 95.
No, not USB. I mean, like, plug and play, quote unquote. That was a marketing
thing. That was super duper a lie.
For Windows 95.
That plug and play initiative was Intel, Microsoft, and somebody else. I can't remember.
But they got that Rolling Stones song.
Start me up?
How could that be a lie?
That's because of the start button.
No, man. I know.
It wasn't plug and play me up.
I'm just saying that whole launch was so festive and upbeat. None of that was bullshit.
Overall, plug and play is good.
Yeah.
Like, when plug and play works, terrific.
Yeah.
It's great.
For example, when you reinstall Windows and all the stuff on your motherboard just works.
Yeah. Or when I take this like a $15 memory card reader that we use to copy the files onto your hard drive.
Yeah, like, that's probably the real actual example is that little card reader you've got in your hand. Yeah. And like I've got a little no-name Bluetooth dongle.
Or like a USB headset. The USB head, usually you don't need drivers for USB audio and even some camera devices.
That Magewell HDMI USB 3 capture device I was talking about, no drivers.
Just plugs it in, and
Windows just sees it as a capture device.
So establishing guidelines for generic versions of all the drive, microphones, all of this stuff, super duper good.
Huge.
Yeah, really, really good, really useful. Way better, especially like now that the internet's everywhere, it's less of a concern. But back in the day when you had to like dial in and download a 3 megabyte driver would take you an hour to download. Like, it was a big deal to not have to do that stuff.
You have to fish out a floppy and format it, make a boot disk.
Get one of those little tiny, remember those little like half size CDs?
Yeah.
Those were good.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't like plug and play because when it doesn't work, it's really, really hard to troubleshoot now.
Is that because it doesn't expose as much of the process? It's more of a black box than it used to be?
Yeah. So
that's fair.
I think we talked about this earlier, but when I was having trouble with too many USB devices on my USB 3.1 chains, it's because they only addressed, like, the original version of USB 3.1 only let you put 120 something devices on. And if you're talking about say, devices that have lots of composite devices like USB audio mixers, which each channel has a as its own device, and VR headsets where there's a camera and an IMUs and Bluetooth radios and all this other stuff in those devices. You're boned.
Yep.
Because there's nowhere in Windows that I could find is there a here, hey, dummy, you have 129 things connected to this chain. So the first one that connects is going to get kicked off for no apparent reason.
Is that really every how time it works?
You play? Oh, it was great.
The first one is the one that gets
it's moved? Either the first one or the last one. Oh, I can't wow. remember.
That's but
it
wild.
I called friends at motherboard manufacturers like, hey, man, your USB drivers are garbage.
Not only should help you not have this. To do that, but most people don't have friends at no. motherboard manufacturers.
No.
Yeah, that's
so. Yeah, shout out to JJ at Asus. He would help me figure that out.
A lot of quirks and idiosyncrasies in this stuff out there. Like the Bluetooth, the USB 2 Bluetooth dongle that I have. Apparently, I found out after some searching, can't be plugged into USB 3 port.
Despite, why is that?
Despite the ports supposedly, you know, going
they're
into
supposed
the,
to be backwards compatible,
fallback,
yeah.
fallback mode. For whatever reason, the polling on that on the USB 3 port is still too high for that dongle to deal with, and it like screws up the sync or something.
Wow.
Along those lines. Like. It literally is expecting exactly the rate of polling or whatever the USB 2 port is going to give it, so you can't put it in a...
Yeah. What esoteric search string did you have to put in to figure that out?
I've probably ended up on Stack Overflow again. I can't remember.
Stack Overflow used to be bad, and now it's good, right?
Yeah, that's been my general experience.
Yeah,
I've been doing a lot of Unix stuff, but I don't know. I feel like the theme of my list is like better, but still not amazing.
I mean... So one of the things that I think about a lot is that we've seen massive, you know, like we've reached a point where the phone in my pocket is an order of magnitude more powerful than my computer was this time 15 years ago or 10 years ago, and maybe equivalent to 10 years ago. But things probably, they do more, but they don't necessarily work better. You know what I mean?
How do you mean?
So like I can take much better pictures and video now than I could this time 10 years ago. But I mean, coming up on the end of the decade, I guess this is the time to think about this stuff, but like my computer is not, I mean, I would get a couple of crashes a month, big crashes a month, right? Still see a couple of big crashes a month.
Okay. Sure.
Like the more we do with the technology, the more new innovative ways for it to not work right. And the more time, I think I probably spend as much time fixing stuff now as I did this time 10 years ago.
So you're basically saying things are getting iteratively better, but still kind of...
I'm not getting any more time back.
Right. Like it's a difference of degree, not of kind.
Yeah.
Right? Like the basic computing experience, the end user experience is more or less what it was. Like, I think
that's fair.
The games look better. Your pictures look better.
Yeah. The monitor is bigger and higher resolution. Well, it's really pretty. Well, maybe, I mean, for most of us.
Maybe yours are.
How's that monitor hunt going? I noticed you didn't have any monitors on your list.
Still checking those press releases. But I get it. Yeah, like, you know, like the music is less compressed, you know, like.
Yeah. The files are smaller.
Quality of things is, you know, the drives are bigger and cheaper.
I have every disc I've ever bought with a movie on it. It's all stored on a Plex server in my garage, and I can watch them all anywhere in the world instantly.
Yeah.
I spend so much time fucking with that. It's astounding.
Yeah. Same. And then don't actually really use it for anything.
Oh, mine gets used there. A lot. Yeah. Can we talk about streaming games?
Sure. Perhaps not like the audience might think, you mean.
Well, I mean, it is Stadia launch week.
That's true. Okay.
Not like that at all.
Maybe they are thinking about it.
I haven't spent any... I've spent like 10 minutes noodling with that thing. It seems
okay. Oh, you've got access to it?
I used at the tested office. Norm had theirs. The one that they sent them. It seems neat.
I also got to try it for like 90 seconds. And just like with the xCloud stuff that I tried a few months ago, like I was kind of shocked at the lack of the latency.
Yeah, I played Mortal Kombat and I was able to like get hits and do blocks and stuff.
Like
I was surprised.
If you really pay attention, I played some Destiny, which I've got plenty of experience playing locally.
Yeah.
And if you really stop and pay attention, you can notice it. But inside of, like I said, 90 seconds or something, I kind of wasn't thinking about it feeling off anymore.
I think your brain just adjusts.
Like, it's kind of remarkable how...
Yeah.
That's the thing I was the most skeptical of, was feedback and latency and control precision and stuff. But really, I feel like from what I've seen, like, the quality of the video compression is a bigger deal than the actual feel of the controls.
Yeah, That seems right. The video compression problems didn't seem like as big a problem on the phone as they would on the TV.
That's not to say the video compression is a big deal. It's more to say like the latency really kind of isn't.
Well, the thing is
crazy. But anyway, like I know we're kind of talking around.
Yeah, I love
your real focus here.
Streaming in the house is really awesome. Like I have a small house, but I have a couple of TVs set up all over, and I have one giant PC in my office that has a huge video card and a big CPU, and it's awesome for playing games on. But after I sit in that desk all day working, I don't always want to sit and play video games there for another 2 or 3 hours at night. And being able to get I think at one point they were like $4, or now they're an app on your TV if you have a newer TV or an Apple TV or something like that, or on your phone, being able to stream games from that giant PC into the other room, or from the PS4 to a PC or whatever. It's awesome. Yeah. I love it. I was playing Outer Worlds last night, which is a terrible example because it actually doesn't TV particularly well.
I mean, the font size?
The fonts are terrible.
Yeah, that is a separate issue.
But like, I was laying in bed playing Outer Worlds, and that's awesome.
Are you on a physical Steam Link?
So that one is a physical Steam Link because it's an older TV. But yeah, it's rad.
There seems to be a small but very devoted following for that thing.
That there's a very active subreddit for like SteamOS stuff, which is, I think, where like there's a Steam Link subreddit as well, but the SteamOS one is where the good info is.
So is it even snappier than what you've seen of remote stuff like Stadia in the little bit of time you've gotten to try that? Like, I would think over your own LAN you're literally talking like tens of feet of Ethernet, right? Like, you're not that far away from the source.
So that one's actually over Wi-Fi.
Oh, really?
So yeah, the box, I think those boxes shipped 802.11n, but they had 802.11ac radios.
Okay.
And when it connects to AC now, and it seems like it's much, much better. I think it's really good. I think it's it used to be that you couldn't play Spelunky on it. Now you can. I don't know what devilry has changed. It could just be that the hardware video stuff on the video card's gotten better. Because I think when I got the Steam Link, I probably had a 980, which I don't think had the dedicated H.264 compression stuff. And I feel like NVIDIA has definitely gotten better with that over the last couple of generations. But yeah, it just works. Like, I play we play Lego The Incredibles and Lego games with my kid in the living room. I play games that I want to play when I'm laying in bed and I'm not able to go to sleep, and I can do it on my phone now too.
And you don't feel like you're missing anything in terms of experience overall, quality, control responsiveness? Like, would you say it's basically just as good?
So I don't really play fighting games, but if I did, I don't think I would try to play like that kind of game. Spelunky is a really timing dependent game, and I've played a lot of Spelunky over it, and it works just fine.
Okay.
And then they added the local, like the couch game streaming thing a couple of weeks ago, which I don't know if you've used yet.
No, is that out?
Oh yeah,
I saw they announced it.
It's rad.
Okay,
I was able to play. So like Heave Ho is a game that doesn't have internet multiplayer. It's a hilarious game. I played that with some friends a couple of weeks. I played it on the Extra Life stream actually, with three of us in Austin and LA and San Francisco. And we were able to play with voice in Discord and the game, and it worked pretty great. Well.
Yeah, wow, that's cool.
I think we tried Samurai Gun and some other like twitchy. Like, I don't think I would try Nidhogg, probably.
A little too twitch.
It's a little too fast. Yeah. I think the host advantage is real.
The games don't have to support it, right? Or do they have to? Is there an API they need to hook into? Like, it's not just any local multiplayer game immediately or automatically works.
So I tried to do it with Octodad and it didn't work the other day. My hunch is that you have to flip a switch in the Steam backend.
Something they need to do.
But you may have to use the Steam controller APIs rather than X input or whatever older games use.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, I'm more interested in that kind of streaming game than like the cloud stuff. But yeah.
All of it taken as a whole, though, really seems like the way things are going, like it or not. Like, when this stuff was first being floated as a concept in the last 3, 4, or 5 years.
Yeah.
I immediately had a very grumpy kind of from my cold dead hands reaction about taking away my local processing.
Well, you bought games on discs because it was like 360. True. Like, OnLive was 360 prior to 360, I think, wasn't it?
No.
It was midway through the 360 generation. Right.
Yeah, I think
it was. Because it was when we were at tested.
I think it was early this decade.
Yeah, it was like 2011 or 2010, 2012.
Yeah.
But yeah, like,
but even more recently, like when the Steam Link came out and stuff, I looked at that and I was like, no, why would I ever? No, I want to play on the thing that is doing the processing of the game and maximize quality, visual quality, and minimize any kind of lag. But like, it seems like maybe that stuff, it's getting to a good enough point now.
I mean, I think the Wi-Fi has gotten a lot better, which is part of it. But the other thing is, yeah, the all you're doing is changing the latency of an HDMI cable, which is pretty low, and the processing on the monitor. to like a bit conversion.
Yeah.
And those are getting faster all the time.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to keep running my 30-foot HDMI cable.
I was going to say, you have a big giant cable
down the hall for the time being, but it seems like we're getting closer.
Just think, if you had a bigger monitor in the office, that's you wouldn't have to run that big giant HDMI cable.
Yep, I get it.
Sit back there with the piggies.
Let's see. The last thing I've got on my list is, we were talking about SSDs before this.
Yeah.
And
SSDs, what?
You floated the idea of SSDs as a thing to be thankful for.
I'm thankful about SSDs.
Whereas I feel like my enthusiasm for PC SSDs in particular is kind of at a low ebb right now. I feel like they've gotten cheap and widely available enough that they are just kind of a fact of life now.
You can get those Intel 2 terabyte drives for under $200 right. now.
Yeah. Okay, that's getting there.
On the reg.
Like, so I guess that's the distinction I'm trying to make. Like they're kind of a no-brainer now to have SSDs, but we have not seen the sort of quantum leap in SSDs in the last little bit that I would like to see to really feel like something is getting worth getting excited about again in that space.
Man, they're plugged right into the PCI Express bus.
I mean, that's cool. Yeah. You know, like I said, I've got Windows installed on that NVMe drive, and that's cool, but
think about how fast your games load. Think about how much faster Death Stranding would load.
Yeah, no, that stuff's good. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, but we've had good SSDs and PCs for like eight.
But we haven't in consoles.
No, that is a whole separate issue or conversation.
I mean,
that's gonna be great.
Every time I load a Destiny multiplayer Crucible game and I have to wait the extra minute for the guy that has the hard drive to load the map in.
Yeah.
Like, man, it'd be nice if everybody was forced to have an SSD. I mean, not very egalitarian of me.
That sounded a little bit dystopian.
Look, man.
Here's your government issued.
I don't want to wait another 30 seconds because some guy hasn't upgraded his hard drive in the last 6 years.
That's fair. I get it.
Yeah.
I think the thing I'm really waiting for, the thing I will be thankful for about SSDs is when we get into, I'm trying to think like what the price to storage ratio
right now we're like 10 cents a gig
is that I'm really looking for. Like, what I really think about is having a NAS full of SSDs instead of spinning hard drives.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Welcome. What?
All I want is a magical sunshine land with lollipops and cake. Well, I mean, you could do that right now if you're Jeff Bezos.
No, yeah, but. Well, no. So I've got 4 6-terabyte drives.
So in my NAS, 24 terabytes of storage.
And I think they're, well, with, you know, redundancy and stuff, it's way less.
Well, but I mean, there's 24. So if you got 12. Well, 2 terabyte SSDs. You're right there.
So you're talking about just having more drives.
That's $2,400. You're good to go.
That is a lot more than I spent on those hard drives.
Those hard drives were what, $200 each?
Less than that.
Okay.
A good bit less.
Okay.
I watched for some sales and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is there aren't enough. Like, I would have to get, you know, extra SATA cards for that PC.
Oh, there's a whole host of problems
to accommodate.
You need 12
drives or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, that's the thing I was going to say is like, there is not a 6 terabyte SSD on the market yet.
Well, there are, but it's not priced. You can't afford them.
I don't think sixes are out. I think four is where it tops out right now.
I'm sure they
have
data center or something, but it's probably $1,200.
Like, you can, but I mean, you can buy a 4 terabyte consumer SSD now, but it's like $500-$600, something like that.
It'll come.
Yeah, we're getting there.
It's always going to be way smaller than the spinning platters,
I guess. Yeah.
I mean, until we hit the physical.
What do you think ever hit a point where like hard drives have just been deprecated as a technology enough that SSDs are actually bigger?
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get there.
At some point, like, look, hard drives work by spinning a physical bit vertical or horizontal based on whether it's one or zero.
You're going to just run into practical size limits at some point, right?
Yeah. And like 10 years ago, they were talking about how they were reaching the size limits, and then somebody figured out they could put the bits on the end and just turn them so that you could pack way more stuff in. So yeah, I don't know, man.
Are you saying the hard drives days are numbered?
I mean, they've been saying that for 20 years now. Yeah. It's like Moore's Law, except for Moore's Law is actually gone.
Honestly, like the big thing, I mean, it would be nice to be able to just leave the NAS on all the time and not worry about power consumption, wasting electricity.
Well, they still use power.
Yeah, but not nearly as much.
I mean, it's
not nearly as much. I mean, you're running a physical motor.
I put the NAS drives to sleep.
Oh, I don't do that.
You should do that.
Really?
Yeah, it saves you a lot of power.
It seemed like the trade-off was like lifespan of the drives. Like spinning them up and down all the time is gonna eat into their. And so that's the real reason that I want solid state drives in a NAS is because, I mean, if you got a bulk storage thing like that, you've probably got stuff on there you don't want to lose. You know, like I've got all kinds of old home movies and
well, that's what backups are
like
for.
All my like college papers and stuff like that, like just kind of sentimental stuff. Just
copy that stuff and drop
it. I mean, yes, I will back it up, but like having a thing where you don't have to worry about mechanical failure leading to data loss.
Yeah, I can. I mean, look, I
hard drives are unreliable and shitty, is what I'm saying. Well, we'll be happy when they're gone.
So here's the thing. If you're running hard drives 24/7 in a NAS, you should plan to replace them at least every 3 years.
Oh yeah, I've got one identical drive in the closet ready to go as soon as one fails.
But like all of those, once you hit 3 years, you're a ticking time bomb on those.
Sure.
So like you should just budget for, hey, I need to put new hard drives in every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah. But I'm sure I've lost data. I'm sure you have. Like most people have probably lost some data on a drive, a single drive that failed that they didn't have backup for, right?
Yeah, that's why I back everything up now.
Right.
That's why we all back up everything now.
Totally. But it's just, it's a huge point of failure.
Well, so I don't think SSDs are inherently that much more reliable. Oh. I think we haven't.
But they fail differently.
They fail differently. We haven't.
They don't fail as catastrophically as a hard drive.
That's
in my experience.
That's well, the thing is, we haven't hit the point where we haven't reached the point where we're going to know what happens with hard drives when they fail.
You mean
with SSDs? Yeah,
I guess so.
Like SSDs just started getting really popular about 5 years ago, and most people don't use them in a way that's going to make them fail quickly.
Yeah, you're right.
It's mostly dependent on writes, not reads.
Yes.
So like and when they fail, they're probably going to be less recoverable than say a spinning set of platters.
I guess I would believe that.
Like if you have the right facilities, you can take the disks out of the thing, totally. Yeah. Put them in an identical drive and they'll just work.
The magnetic data might still be intact. It's
probably there.
More mostly. Of a mechanical problem.
But, yeah.
I don't know. My impression is that SSDs are pretty self-policing about the way they fail. Like there are ways to tell, like
assuming they fail because they've run out of capacity for more writes.
Like they start siloing that area of the memory off, right?
Yeah.
Or are supposed to when that stuff starts going bad.
But like if the controller just wears out, like if a capacitor pops on the controller or something like that. Like yesterday I was firing up my stream PC, the one that runs the OBS and all that stuff, and it just turned off and rebooted for no reason.
Nice.
And when it came back up, it didn't have any drives inside.
Okay.
I was like, that's weird because there's definitely a drive in there. And I powered it all the way off. And powered it all the way back on, and it worked. Yep. And I hit the backup button immediately.
You can't trust electrons.
No, that's the thing. They're untrustworthy.
They're feisty.
But SSDs are nice, I think.
Yeah, they're good.
Despite your hate.
They could be better.
I can't believe you. I feel like I've learned so much horrible stuff today.
What have SSDs done for me lately?
Look, how long? I'm gonna take your NVMe SSD. I'm going to replace it with a 6 terabyte spinning disk drive. And I'm going to see, we'll see if he notices the difference. It's like the Folgers challenge, Taster's choice. We've replaced his normal coffee with delicious Taster's choice.
We're really dating ourselves here.
Yeah. Anyway, you'll know in the 3 minutes it takes you to start your computer.
Yeah.
I guess that does it for us this week.
I think so. We've got a lot of turkey to eat.
Yeah.
A lot of butt stuff.
Let's talk some turkey.
Yeah.
Hope you have a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You do the same.
Yeah, I'm going back to Virginia this year for the first time in 20 years.
To the old family visit.
Yeah, I wanted to go, and we're going to go see some museums in D.C. with the kiddo and do some other stuff. So it'll be fun. But
wish you and yours a happy holiday.
Yeah, same to everybody in the audience, too.
Yeah, thanks for everybody for listening.
Thanks for all the reviews.
We're thankful
on
for
iTunes.
You.
Yeah, we are very
and
thankful
for you. And for your iTunes reviews.
Yeah, exactly. Especially thankful for those positive iTunes reviews. Yeah. 4 stars and higher. No. thank you all. It's lovely to get feedback. I think maybe we'll do a question episode in the next couple episodes again, because I think rather than do, all of the questions at the end of each episode, we'll do like questions every few weeks.
Let's save them up for
a month or month and a half or something. Yeah.
A cornucopia of user emails.
Ooh, yes. So send your emails to techpod@content.town and we will answer them
yes
in an upcoming episode.
Indeed.
See y'all next time. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.